What is that peach seed monkey? That thing that we need from our fathers? That thing that confirms and solidifies our relationship? Whatever it is, Isaac didn't get it. He felt he never would. No token in the mail, no apology, no note of understanding, nothing. It says in the Bible that Isaac never spoke to his father Abraham again after that last memorable encounter, it appears, he gave up. Nowhere in the verses after that fateful day do they speak. Nowhere are they together. Not in the next chapter when Sarah, Abraham's wife and Isaac's mother, dies. Nor two chapters later when Isaac marries Rebekah. The next time the Bible mentions Isaac being with his father is three chapters later when he comes to bury him. No monkey, no tears. Some fathers and sons have a falling out. Hurts are endured, grudges form. Communication becomes strained. It becomes hard to let go of old stuff, especially in situations where your father sacrifices you to appease his God. It's hard not to take that personally, even in the most understanding families. The bond between a father and his children is one which wavers between tenderness and trauma. It can be warm or wounding, hopeful or hurtful. But each side spends a lifetime trying to get something or trying to live without it. Some promise, some understanding, frequently unsure on both sides if what has been done is enough. The story of Abraham and Isaac is found in the 22nd chapter of Genesis. It is referred to by some scholars as Abraham's test. By others, it is referred to as the sacrifice of Isaac. Some say Abraham passed the test, proved his faithfulness to God. Others see it differently, especially Isaac. The story starts out plainly. One day, God tested Abraham, it begins. Abraham, the voice called, "Here am I," he replied. "Take your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac. Go to the mountain of Moriah, build an altar there, and make a sacrifice of him there on one of the hills that I will show you." That was the whole message, the request from his God, Abraham's test. The Bible doesn't say whether Abraham paused, whether he scratched his head, or whether his mouth dropped open when he heard the call. It doesn't say whether he stopped to ask his wife Sarah what she thought, although I have to think that would be one of the all-time most stupid questions. It only says that he saddled his donkey, took Isaac and two other men, the wood that he had chopped for the sacrifice, a firestone, and a knife. 3 days into the journey, the story tells how Abraham sees the place in the distance, and he leaves the men behind and continues on with Isaac. They walk together with the wood and the firestone and the knife. "Father," calls Isaac. "Here am I," Abraham replies. "Here is the stone and the wood and the knife. But where is the lamb for the sacrifice?" "Where is the lamb for the sacrifice?" Isaac asks. The Bible doesn't describe Abraham as he answers the question. It doesn't say whether he looks at Isaac as they walk or if he just stares straight ahead. It doesn't say whether his answer comes with determination or in a faltering voice. It doesn't say. But it seems to me this would reveal a lot about how or even whether Abraham passed the test. God will provide the lamb, Abraham says. Abraham and Isaac continue silently toward the mountain. The altar is built, the wood is stacked, and then Abraham binds his son and places him on the altar. And just as he raises the knife against his son, God intervenes and spares Isaac. The story says that Abraham looked up and noticed that a ram was caught in a nearby thicket. The ram is then sacrificed instead of Isaac, and Abraham names the place Yireh, meaning God provides. The story is often read and preached from the perspective that Abraham passed God's test, that when called, he demonstrates faithfulness to a God who provides. But it's important to note that Isaac might not see it this way, that Isaac might actually worship a different God, a God who does not abandon him in his time of need, who does stand up instead to tyranny on his behalf, who does not sacrifice him to worship that which is offered a higher loyalty and love. It has always seemed to me that this is a story of two different people with two different rivaling gods, and how people who don't understand one another's gods clash with one another. But of course, we must realize that the story of Abraham and Isaac is a story that takes place in a very different time, in a very different place, in a world where fathers actually did practice child sacrifice to find favor with their gods, something that we don't understand much of today. Or do we? A recent report on fatherhood compiled by the Family Policy Study Center shows that most fathers, when asked about their roles, cited the role of provider as the most compelling and demanding component within their identity as a father, especially in today's consumer culture. The report acknowledges that other roles, such as guardian and mentor and teacher and caregiver, were important too, but that most fathers considered these other roles as additional rather than fundamental to the call of fatherhood. The study also found that breaking out of that provider role, no matter how desirable it would be to play a different role in your family, was very difficult for fathers. Almost all fathers who were not able to provide for their families reported feelings of letting everyone down or being of no use to anybody, harboring feelings of worthlessness within their clan. Even attempts to renegotiate that provider role with the mother often proved very hard in most families. Many found that the caregiver role was so strongly viewed as what a mother does that the role of provider was the only way that fathers could show that they care. Ralph Keyes, the author of the book Sons on Fathers, describes the struggle that he had with his own fathers in many ways familiar to many of us. He says, "Like so many fathers in the 50s and the 60s, mine lived on the outskirts of our family. He worked a lot, he traveled at times, and didn't have much to say when he was home. There were occasions of playful, even tender interaction, but that sort of thing is rare in my memory. I just don't recall a whole lot about my dad during my childhood. To me, he felt present, but not accounted for. This wasn't what I had in mind for a father. I'd been hoping for Superman and had to settle for Clark Kent." Having Superman for a father has its appeal. It is common in our culture for children to grow up wanting to esteem their dads as being crime-fighting, cape-wearing, do-gooding, larger-than-life superheroes who hit home runs, are handy with a hammer and handy with their fists, who tell stories of high adventure and faraway places, who they can brag about on the playground just like fathers want to brag about their children in the office. But such things, toughness and heroics, rarely turn out to be that peach seed monkey, that thing, that token of reassurance that helps us understand what we long to know as we struggle to sift through the events of our time together and looking for meaning and connection. The peach seed monkey is more than a memorable keepsake. It is a confirmation of a promise made and never spoken, but always yearned for. A promise of undeniable connection. And some fathers and sons never experience a moment where the peach seed monkey is passed along. For a few, a rare few, it is because that connection is something routinely exchanged and doesn't need to be mentioned. But for others, it is because a rift forms which becomes too wide, the time too limited to bridge it, our ability to risk sharing vulnerability and intimacy too uncertain to trust. Many fathers spend years trying to carve that monkey, wanting a way to convey their feelings and their failings and pass something good on about themselves to their children, expressing fear that all they have done might never be enough, wanting the healing that comes with being able to believe that it could be. My father and I know that dance. My father started out as a mixture of Superman and Clark Kent to me, occasionally appearing larger than life, able to save the day, and often off saving the day somewhere else. I started myself as a mixture between Jimmy Olsen and Lex Luthor, sometimes bumbling around trying to do the right thing, sometimes scheming to destroy the planet. And there were a couple of instances where we did battle. Like Abraham and Isaac, we heard the call of different gods, and occasionally our gods clashed. My father drove big rig trucks for the first 7 years of my life and went to night school on top of that. If my father heard the voice of God asking him to provide for his family, it was something that he never explained to me. Or it might have been that I was just too preoccupied listening to the voice of my own God that told me I missed him. I didn't always understand his God. He didn't always understand mine. One night, when my brother Doug and I were 6 and 5, we were with my dad when he was finishing delivering a load in his truck, and we went back to the trucking company so that my father could return the truck and do his paperwork. And during that drive, Doug and I had fallen asleep in the cab, and when my dad finished unloading, he saw that we were asleep, and not wanting to wake us up, he carried us to the back of the empty truck and laid us out on the freight box on packing blankets, and then he closed the big sliding door and went in to do his paperwork. My dad figured that we would just sleep through that time that he was in the office, but we didn't. We woke up and we found ourselves in a pitch dark box, alone. And I remember the mixture of terror and dread that ran down my spine when I awoke. I was silent for several minutes, taking it in, and then I called out to my brother, who responded in an already awake voice that told me that he too was aware that we were alone, and he too felt that suffocating sense of dread bearing down on him. Where are we? I don't know, but Dad's gone. Well, I guess this is it. He's finally left us for good. Yep. I guess we're on our own. Yep. What do you think we should do? I don't know. And there was a long pause. I guess we're going to have to find another place to live. Yeah. But how do we do that? Well, we'll need some money. I have some at home in my bank, my brother said. And I began to cry because I always spent all of my money on candy and soda. We'll probably need to get jobs, he said. Jobs? What kind of jobs? I asked, being very unsure of my employability. God the provider suddenly didn't sound so bad. There's got to be some jobs we can do. I can mow lawns, my brother said. But I don't know how to mow lawns, I said, and began to cry again. And my brother thought for a second and then reassured me that I could rake the leaves. Still, one of the nicest and most comforting things he's ever said to me. From that point, we figured we would have to find our way back to the house, steal the lawnmower and the rake before we made our way out into the world. And just as we were about to make our break from the back of that truck, up slid the door. And there stood my dad. "You're awake," he said, surprised. He did not notice the 6-foot altar my brother and I had erected in our minds, nor did he notice the fact that we had just spent the last 20 minutes bound to it. He did not notice the knife that was raised or our resignation. All he saw was the tears in my eyes as he pulled me close to his chest. "What's wrong?" he asked. But I could not tell him. I could not find the words to describe the turmoil that I felt. What is that peach seed monkey, that thing that we need from our fathers? Though I yearned for it almost every day of my life when I was growing up, it would be years before I would find a way to describe it to anyone. Things got worse before they got better. My parents got divorced, and feelings of abandonment chipped away my efforts to build self-esteem. My dad continued to work hard. He finished school, which meant he could stop driving trucks, and he took a job as a teacher close to where we lived, and he started coming around after school every day just to play catch. He began to carve out a relationship, and more important, he began to carve something out of the seed which was formed between us. And one night came a gift, a strange, unique, unexpected package in the mail, so to speak. It was bedtime, and our dad was reading us a story. We sometimes got fairy tales or other stories you'd expect at bedtime, but for a couple weekends in a row, Dad read from a different book, one about divorce. It was a little dry, and I had trouble understanding what it was really all about until something came that I didn't expect. There came a part in the book where Dad's voice started to falter, and it seemed as though he were almost about to cry. And in my memory, I had never seen him cry before, and rarely since. The words he read are carved into me to this day. He said, "Just because a father gets divorced and isn't always around doesn't mean that he doesn't love his children." He paused, and then he read it again, slower this time. It wasn't even the words that he read that told me what I needed to hear. It was the way he read them. It was the peach seed monkey, at least part of it. In the years that followed, my father continued to worship the God who provides. He rarely worked less than 2 jobs to help me pay for my college and get me the things that I needed. He once sent me $1,000 after I was robbed on vacation so I could get home. He never mentioned it again. But the things that have become even more important to me were the smaller things, the time he made, the letters and cards he sent, the way he got excited every time he heard my voice on the phone. It hasn't been until the last few years that I have really begun to see some important things about my father, not the least of which is that he never had a father himself. that he learned to live with a sense of abandonment far greater than anything his children ever knew, that he had experienced more sacrifice than he ever asked of his children, and that he has spent much of his life worrying if all he has done is enough, if he was a good father, if he passed the test. Most theologians argue, saying Abraham passed the test, proved his faithfulness to God. But I disagree. I side with Isaac and the theologians who say that Abraham got the test all wrong. The real test was whether or not Abraham could say no to God, to understand that it is impossible to ultimately serve a holy cause by sacrificing what is holy to us. Did my father pass the test? I love my father, and I am learning to stop grading him, even though it often feels like he asks me to. I have given up believing that by judging his efforts, I will somehow gain that sense of worth or well-being that I've wanted my whole life. I have given up giving away the power to determine whether or not I am loved and whether or not I am lovable. Through time and balance and struggle and effort and risk and love, my father let me know in very imperfect ways that I am holy to him. That is all the peach seed monkey ever says to us. My father has never sent me a peach seed monkey, at least not a whole one, but he has sent me all the parts. Few fathers ever manage to give their children all that they need without asking them to provide a little glue themselves to hold it all together. But imperfect gifts glued together are what end wars between rival gods. Imperfect gifts glued together provided all that is ever needed to stand up to the greatest tests of our lives, to escape the fears that we feel bound to, and see the promise of who we are and what we're called to do, to the glory of life.